Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You're finally going to announce that you're running for president.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I have it in me. I'm scared. I'm kidding. Let's do this.
You put the hill in hilarious. Now,
pretty
since
funny.
We're announcing your candidacy via social media, we thought it would be fun if you actually filmed the video yourself on your own phone. That way it seems more personal and intimate.
Personal and intimate, yes. I better take off this jacket then.
She takes it off and reveals another jacket underneath. Not exactly the fashion paragon there, but remember my words. Ooh, okay. She who laughs last. And I want to hear from you on this Monday. How you doing this Blue Monday? Monday, April the 13th. So Saturday Night Live, I don't know if you saw it, but the clips are being played everywhere. Brought back Daryl Hammond, who's hilarious as Bill Clinton, to hit Hillary where it must still hurt, right in the Lewinsky. So now you have these comics critics cascading out of the woodwork on Sunday, falling over each other to ridicule, to blunt any announcement bounce from the former Secretary of State as Senator Hillary Clinton again tosses her hat. I almost said bonnet. That's just exactly the kind of language to get me in trouble at home. She tosses her hat into the presidential ring, this time via social media. And she got, immediately chewed up by the core of conservative commentators. So our old buddy, Renz Priebus, I saw him on CBS, The Sunday Show, the chairman of the RNC, the Republican National Committee. So he and the commentators all hitting Hillary hard, this first salvo of criticism. So get used to the, they're telegraphing their blows. Get used to hearing Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. The GOP trying to breathe new life into that that old controversy they hope still smolders around the tragic deaths of our four heroes in that Libyan city more than 3 years ago. Benghazi, Benghazi, going to get sick of hearing Benghazi. And close on the heels of that antique is the newer scandal involving Senator Clinton's use, of course, was Secretary Clinton, I should say, of the private email server during her time as our top diplomat, as Secretary of State, which I still believe that scandal going nowhere unless the act of deleting the messages in and of itself is criminal or at least bad enough to convey the message that, see, those Clintons still sneaky. See, she's still lying in the same sordid way that Bill Clinton lied when he told us that he didn't have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. So Saturday Night Live, I love Daryl Hammond, and I hope that he sticks around. But here he is from last night.
Oh, Christina, meet my hand in the air.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yes. good, good.
Okay, let's keep going, and this time maybe focus on all that you've done for women's
rights. He's coming.
Oh, okay, that's good. I am running because I want to be a voice for women everywhere.
Did someone say women everywhere?
Pretty funny. Hard to live down, ask me.
Hillary would make a great president.
Thank you.
And I would make an even greater first dude.
Daryl Hammond, I really hope they keep that the casting was terrific. I loved it. But the big headline, aside from the jokes, the big headline today is heralding how New York's hard left mayor, Bill de Blasio, refused to endorse Hillary yesterday when given the chance on the day of the big announcement. See, on that one, I think that the media is falling for predetermined political strategy. And I think if the mayor and the secretary didn't coordinate ahead of time, they should have, because it was brilliant. He's so hard left. Let's face it, our mayor, a populist, progressive, he might as well be a socialist. He's all about embracing public sector unions and income redistribution and reforming the police and so forth. And if Clinton followed his lead to the left, she'd be trounced in places like Iowa and Colorado, South Carolina, Texas, Pennsylvania, Ohio. She has to run from the middle. So you have de Blasio and the Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and the former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley? Who the hell is Martin O'Malley? How about Lincoln Chafee, the former governor of Rhode Island? They're her designated left-wing foils. They're political small fries, and they're there precisely to show how unlike these little left-wingers she is, how much larger than life she is. How much more fiscally responsible she is. How much more socially moderate she is. And when the time comes, I guarantee you, the liberals will all fall in line, including Mayor de Blasio, who once served as known reporter at the top of the show, Hillary's campaign manager when she ran successfully for the U.S. Senate here in New York. So, Noam, you led with that. Welcome back. You have de Blasio. When you first heard that he refused to endorse it, what was your reaction?
I had the same reaction that you did. You know, the left wing of the Democratic Party wants Elizabeth Warren to run, the senator from Massachusetts. She said she's not going to. And she represents that hardcore left, exactly what you say. But, you know, Clinton, the initial primaries are in states that are real centrist states for the Democratic Party. There's no way she can win if she goes that way. I mean, even though she has no opposition at this point. So.
But I mean, Lincoln Chafee, Martin O'Malley.
They're not names you've ever
scary.
Heard of.
They're scary.
Yeah.
Really scary. And you got 20 or more Republican candidates in already or about to jump in, ready to chop each other apart in the months to come. I mean, just remember what they did to Mitt Romney in 2012, what they did to John McCain in 2008. You have Rand Paul and Ted Cruz already into the fray, raising all kinds of money. What do you think they're going to spend that money on? You think they're going to spend that money on attacking Hillary? I don't think so. They have to get the nomination, so they're going to use it in a circular firing squad. You have Marco Rubio launching today, and you have the 800-pound gorilla governor, brother, and son of presidents, Jeb Bush, waiting in the wings, who I still think is the only practical alternative. In the meantime, and I'm going to take your calls momentarily, 866-ERALDO, you have Secretary Clinton driving around the country. What, she's in a minivan or something?
Yeah, she's in a black minivan. Doesn't look very comfortable, by the way.
A black minivan. We got to get her a Subaru, at least. From Ramsey Subaru.
Well, it has
Subaru.
To be an American car.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, if you're running for president, I guess. So what, she got an old Chevy? What does she got?
I have to look it up. I saw it, but I didn't recognize what it was.
So she's going to be driving around in the minivan, you know, she's going to ditch the couture suits. The suits is a bad look.
The pantsuit?
The pantsuit.
Yeah, no,
come on, we're over the pantsuit. Not that she should wear like Gucci or, you know, plunging necklines from J-Lo, but I think that there's got to be a different way to portray both style and, you know, a conservative, age-appropriate.
You know, you're going to get hammered for this because they're going to say, you're not saying this about any of the guys in the race You're only
but
talking about
Marco
her clothes.
Marco Rubio was wearing like a salsa
you,
shirt.
You wouldn't even notice what Marco Rubio is wearing because they all wear suits. You know, maybe you notice the tie being a little different. Well, maybe they wear a pink
Rand
shirt.
Rand Paul. How about him? At least he wears like denim.
Yeah, he was wearing an orange shirt the other day. I was like, what's that all about?
An orange?
Yeah.
So anyway, you got Secretary Clinton. She's going to try with her minivan tour to convince skeptical Americans that she's just like the rest of us. And what we need is to heal the partisan divide. That's true, though. Isn't it true? We have to heal the partisan divide. I mean, aren't you sick of this dysfunctional Congress? And maybe we need a wise, experienced, sober grandmother, even one with a flamboyant former Playboy president husband and a private email system. And I'm telling you, folks, if you think she's going to be an easy mark, you should talk to my wife and all of her friends. They got together for a 40th birthday party in Chicago over the weekend. They are all going to be lobbying us, all the brutes, to elect the first woman ever. It's a year and a half from now, but if she does a major percentage of the woman vote, throw the Latinos in there, major percentage of the Latinos, African Americans, just there, women, Latinos, and African Americans. That's damn close to 50% there of the voters. All depends on turnout. That's no joke. Let me take Susan in Brooklyn. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling.
You know, I think what we need to do with these candidates is look at their records and what they've accomplished. And I want to know, when she was senator from New York, what legislation did she pass that is, if she's so interested in the plight of women or just the public in general, other than riding on Bill Clinton's coattails, she wouldn't have never even been a senator. Or as Secretary of State, what is her record?
So I'm interested about you. Are you, Susan, getting any pressure from your gender, other women? Say, how dare you speak out against the woman who could be the first female president of the United States?
You know, I don't really care about that. This country is in so much trouble for all the children. I'm a baby boomer, and I look at what we're leaving for this next generation, and it's a crying shame. So I really don't care what other people say about. It's nothing about gender. I would vote for the man or woman on the moon if they could come up with solutions to the serious issues on the table, if they show that they have the character. I'd rather see someone like Ben Carson, who is such a quality individual, someone who has lifted himself from abject poverty and who is such a quality individual. I'm tired of all these politicians who are up for herself. She gets $300,000 for a 20-minute talk. And she's going to relate to the common people. I think we've seen enough of what she really is. I have no trust or faith in her. I'd love to vote for a woman. I'd love to vote for anyone who can have the ability and is serious about solving the problems, not just lining their own.
All right, Susan, you should be a commentator with your own show. Very articulately stated. I wonder if you represent anything near a majority. You may. A very surprising poll has come out that I'll be giving you the results of after this short intermission. 866 Geraldo. We'll be back.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo. 77 WABC.
I received an award from a group called Independence Residence. On Friday evening, basically, it's like Life's Work, the charity I raised the money for on Celebrity Apprentice, provide housing for autistic and other developmentally disabled young people, particularly as they age out. You know, you can have real situations when the parents aren't around to take care of them. I'm going to get back to the topic in a minute, but I'm just looking at this story on the running on the wires out of Philadelphia. An arrest warrant issued for the mother of a severely disabled man. So this mother of a 21-year-old quadriplegic with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair, she takes him out in the woods, leaves him in the woods, covered with a light blanket. She puts leaves over him so he can't be seen. Then she goes off. She leaves her home there near Philadelphia and goes to visit her boyfriend in Maryland. Only by the grace of God is this completely defenseless young man discovered by passersby who rescue him. You know, the mother, I hope they throw the book at her. This premeditated horror, what she did is absolutely unforgivable. The tragedy, though, illustrating my point that whether she is driven by narcissism and selfishness or desperation or some combination thereof, this is going to be the future of the world. If we don't deal with these autistic youngsters as they begin to age out and the others with developmental disabilities, if we don't provide them with an alternative where they can live a humane, compassionate life, productive life, then this is going to be the crap that happens. I mean, this woman should be thrown away forever.
She should, but on one level, I completely understand her desperation. Obviously, I don't understand what she did, but the desperation is there having autistic member in my family, the not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing how to take care of them. And there's so few alternatives, Geraldo. There's nobody to turn to. There's so few people to say, hey, come help me out. It starts right when they're in elementary school all the way up until high school.
Agreed.
You have to fight for them to get into classes where they'll get the teaching that they deserve because the school systems are already overburdened, don't have the money to do it. And then what happens in this woman's case, and again, I mean, awful what she did, but at 21, you age out of the system. Where do you go?
Where do
you
go?
How do you take care of that adult? And then when you die, what happens to
that adult? What happens when you die? Exactly. I mean, it's the future of the world, and we all have to get behind it. That's why I'm so engaged with this. I just believe that of all, there's so many competing great causes out there, all the disease du jour. You've got to cure breast cancer and cure colon cancer and prostate cancer and heart this and heart bad. And, you know, I totally understand, and they're all very worthy. But this is the societal, I used the expression gorilla before, but I mean, this is the time bomb that's going to blow. And if we're not ready for it. Okay, back to politics, back to, you know, rather than talk about these grim real life. You know, I think that Hillary Clinton would do a pretty good job on that issue. I think Jeb Bush would also. I wonder, I'd like to hear from Marco Rubio and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz about these kinds of social issues. I understand they're against Obamacare, all the rest of that. I wonder how they're going to deal with the population like this, a vast population. What, one out of 60 kids is autistic
these days?
I mean, if we're not ready for this, ladies and gentlemen, shame on us. But meantime, let's talk about Hillary. You got her driving around in her minivan, trying to convince skeptical Americans that she's just like you all, just like us all. All right, Judy and Mineola, you're first up this segment. What's on your mind?
Hello, Geraldo. I called to say that Hillary Clinton is absolutely unqualified to be president of the United States.
All right, now let me just stop you there before you get to.
I would recommend that she turn the van around.
Okay.
Those of us who are and have been professional women would not back her. Maybe 40-year-olds or 30-year-olds who need a cause and something to talk about over coffee would. She is in.
But when you say, hold it, Judy, let me just want to give you a couple of facts. I mean, she was first lady. She was the elected senator from New York State. She was Secretary of State. How could you call her? She's a lot of things, but I don't think you could call her unqualified.
She's a very cagey camp follower who was swept in on the coattails of an immoral husband. Give me a break.
All right, so you don't think she has any qualification?
No, and I think before she
She's
runs,
less qualified than, say, Rand Paul, a first-term senator.
Absolutely, and I'm far older, and I'm an older voter. And I would not vote for someone who violated American values as far as Benghazi went.
All right, so this is the second woman today in a row.
There's
the second female.
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC. Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Hillary Clinton in a minivan tour heading to Iowa. Show she's just folks. Just like you and me. As she runs for president, she's not a dynasty. You know, I saw Caroline Kennedy, who is the ambassador to Japan, on 60 Minutes yesterday. And you talk about a political dynasty. The reason they love her, one of the reasons, I mean, she's a charming, gracious, intelligent, sophisticated person, is that her anointment to the job of ambassador to Japan was seen by the Japanese as a tremendous reaffirmation of the special relationship Japan has with the United States. My goodness, they sent us the daughter of the president. I mean, political dynasties are as much a fact of life in the United States as they are in Great Britain or any of these other monarchs, as they are in Japan with the emperor and so forth. So we tend to get used to families as in this leadership role. And the insurgents, they had the first generation folks like, Rubio, have a tough time. In Rand Paul's case, he's got a different problem. His father, who was a politician before him and the generation before him, is a congressman and perennial, libertarian presidential candidate. His problem is that he was kind of nutty. So people wonder if Rand Paul's a little nutty because his dad was a little nutty. I mean, I like the nuttiness, and a lot of it is very appealing to me, politically speaking. But we have our own dynasties here. Here's George in Glendale. What's up, George? What are you thinking about? George, can I just put you on hold one half a second? Just don't go away. I have Bob Constantini, the Westwood One correspondent in Des Moines, Iowa, traveling or waiting for Hillary's arrival there in the key first caucus state, Iowa. So, Bob, welcome aboard. Tell me, and I'll get back to George. Bob, you tell me, what's the response to Hillary's social media announcement yesterday?
Well, George, thank you very much for holding off. I am in Des Moines. Good morning from Des Moines. Looking out perhaps off in the distance, Interstate 80, where at some point we expect that maybe we'll see this van caravan of Hillary Clinton's coming from New York across the country here to the heartland to make her first appearance tomorrow, our first scheduled appearance tomorrow in Monticello, Iowa, where she'll be talking to some community college.
Unless she gets over the wrong exit, then it will be Idaho. But go ahead.
Yeah. the low-key campaign that she's going to be running at least for the first month, her aides are telling us, they're not giving out very much information, limited press access to these events. We may be able to catch her at some other stop along the way. That's how they're going to run it, at least for the first month. No huge rallies, no cheering, raucous crowds. That's how it's going to be here for now. We'll see how the people respond here. They didn't respond, obviously, all that well back in 2008, but this time around, the Democratic field is considered relatively small here. But the only interesting thing, Geraldo, I saw a poll this morning on TV, the only head-to-head Republican candidate who actually is ahead of Hillary Clinton right now here in Iowa is Rand Paul, 42% to 40%,
And what do they figure that's about, Bob Constantini and Westwood One? What do they figure that Rand Paul's early lead in Iowa is about? I mean, who are these people supporting him?
Well, I'll tell you, it's, I guess like his father who had strong backers, the people who do support Rand Paul are very committed to it, whereby you perhaps would think any number of other voters aren't necessarily sure whether they want a Republican versus Hillary Clinton. I would chalk it up to that probably at this point. Who knows how this is all going to play out. It's a long time between now and November of 2016.
Right, Bob Constantini, that for sure. But I'd love you to check back with us when the van appears over the corn stalks and the horizon. I appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm looking out over the window now.
Okay, buddy. I appreciate that. Okay, now back to George. George, how you doing, buddy?
Okay, two quick things.
Go ahead.
You forgot. De Blasio got fired as Clinton's campaign manager back in 2000. With 2 weeks to go in the election, they canned him.
Really? Was that a big... Noam's looking it up right now. So you think he's got some bitterness issues?
They moved him to the side and got rid of him. That's number one. Number two is, don't you think that's why he hasn't endorsed her? Because 2013, she wouldn't endorse him for mayor right away.
She had Christine Quinn. She had a lot of other things. But you're right. It could be just political payback. But I believe.
Comes around.
What goes around comes around. I absolutely. And I believe that I believe in karma and justice.
But I still think that when you analyze it and analyze how important the mayor of the biggest city in the country is, the guy who wants to be the voice of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, how important he is, I think the whole thing, if there weren't conversations, specific conversations, okay, here's what you do. You lay low. Don't endorse her yet. Endorse her further down the line. You tell the world that you're going to hold her feet to the progressive fire. Make sure she doesn't drift too far to the center, too far away from sacred traditional democratic values and public sector unions and income redistribution and, making the nation a fairer, more compassionate place, etc. You make sure that she stays, liberal enough for us. And then at the time when it matters, just before the voting, say, in Iowa, then you launch. I think that it's much more premeditated. And I know you agree with me, right?
That was assuming that I was paying attention to all that. I was looking for the answer to your question.
All right,
about
good. Well, find the damn answer then. Brian in Cold Spring, what's up?
How are you?
Were you paying attention?
Hopefully.
I'm trying to pay attention.
Okay, buddy. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm continually surprised of the callers you get. It's almost like there's some kind of alternate reality out there. I mean, why do people even consider voting for against their own interests, for the party that, almost bankrupted the country, cut taxes to the rich, started unnecessary wars? My opinion about Hillary is she's the one that's going to give the Republicans the hardest time. And what is the alternative?
Exactly. What's the alternative on the Democratic side? Who would you pick? I almost said Walter O'Malley. He was the old general manager of the Dodgers.
No,
Martin O'Malley. That's it. Martin O'Malley. All I know about him is he plays guitar.
No. Hillary. Hillary is the only alternative right now. But if you don't vote for Hillary, if you don't support somebody like her, I don't know what else there is.
I agree. And I think the Democrats get that as well. Thank you, Brian. Excellent call. So, Randy. Hey, Randy in New Jersey. What's up?
Yeah, Gerardo, the last segment you had a young lady on that asked you a question about what was Hillary's accomplishments as a senator.
Right.
And
I didn't look it up. I should have.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
You turned the question right around and asked her a question that had no bearing on what her question was.
I'm going to, when you talk, I'll Google. I'll find out what she did as a senator. I don't remember. I know that she voted for the war in Iraq, which is why she got beat up by Barack Obama in 2008. I know that that was the biggest anchor, the fact that she, like John Kerry, ultimately were supporters of George W. Bush in 2003 when you needed the voice that said, wait a second, the evidence of Saddam Hussein's possession of weapons of mass destruction is too hinky. Don't go there. She didn't go there. She suspended disbelief. She went along with George W. Bush, and it cost her the nomination last time. I think that's fair to say. What her accomplishments were other than that, I don't know.
She was involved. I was looking up. That caller was right, correct, that de Blasio was tanked as campaign manager of Hillary's campaign
back
in 2000.
What happened? What was the issue?
It's kind of what people complain about him today. That he was too laissez-faire.
He was too late?
Yeah, he was late for things. No, but he'd go on conference calls where he would be in charge of the conference call, and he'd let them go on too long, and she just got frustrated with him. So the final 2 months of the campaign, they brought in a longtime Clinton pal to take over
the campaign. How did this guy get elected mayor? Really, how did he get elected mayor?
I don't know.
I don't get it. A lifelong politician, a guy who'd never had a job in the private sector. Has he ever had a job ever
in the private sector?
No. I mean, the best thing he's ever done in his life is raise those brilliant children. I mean, Dante's, and that's not nothing.
Right.
That's not nothing. But a lot of people raise great kids, and they don't deserve to be mayor of the greatest city on earth either, particularly when they come up through the ranks of the, what was he? It wasn't borough president, was he? Assemblyman?
He was a public advocate.
A public advocate. That's what he was.
It's kind of a nothing job.
A nothing job. Yeah. And he beat Christine Quinn, who's a real feisty speaker of the city council. And, he beat a bunch of others, Thompson, the controller, arguably had a lot more experience and, a lot more of an attention span and were on time more. I don't have any more time for the questions right now. Give me a minute, though. I'm coming back to you all.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
I want to get back to the Hillary issue and your phone calls, which I have found very enlightening today. 866-HERALDO. But before I do that, the other issue and this surprising survey that I teased at the top of the hour and forgot to resolve, the surprising survey, remember this, that in 2012, 69 or 70%, not sure, right in there, the surveys differ, 69, 70% of Jewish Americans voted for Barack Obama. 69, 70%. And New York led the way, despite the fact that you have a big, Orthodox section of the Jewish community here who voted for Mitt Romney. Jews generally, secular Jews for sure, voted overwhelmingly as they traditionally do for the Democrat, the incumbent Barack Obama. Now you have a situation where Hillary Clinton is viewed favorably, according to the Siena poll cited in the New York Post by our pal Fred Dicker. So the Siena poll has Hillary viewed favorably by New Yorkers, 59 to 38%. Overwhelming support for Hillary among New Yorkers generally. 59 to 38. But according to the same Siena poll, she has a negative 44 to 50% rating, 44 in favor, 50% against among Jewish voters in New York. So this is amazing how low she is polling among Jewish voters in New York, the heart of Jewish life in America. So can she turn those traditional Democratic voters back to her candidacy? Can she bring that Sheldon Adelson, AIPAC, Israel right or wrong crowd back into the Democratic fold? That's one of the great mysteries in this intriguing election cycle. We'll talk about it after this.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Sources say that tomorrow Hillary Clinton will formally announce her presidential campaign. Early polling shows that Hillary has a substantial lead over her nearest Democratic challenger, the margin of error.
That's, in humor, there lies truth. There is no Democratic alternative to Hillary. The Democrats are making what is in Vegas kind of a risky bet. It's an all or nothing bet on the former Secretary of State, former New York State Senator, former First Lady Hillary Clinton. And before the news break, I mentioned that Siena poll that the Post is carrying today. Hillary viewed favorably by New Yorkers, 59 to 38%. 59 favorable, 38% unfavorable, but a negative 44 to 50% rating among Jewish voters in New York, which I find astonishing. 44% positive, 50% negative among Jewish voters, and it is all about Barack Obama, Bibi Netanyahu, Sheldon Adelson, Israel right or wrong. The Democratic candidate has to be as absolutely, as unwaveringly supporting of every position Israel has or risk losing that Jewish vote to the Republican the way the Orthodox Jews in this community voted for Mitt Romney in 2012. But I think that it is shocking to me that Hillary is not Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, they have been Israeli favorites for decades. And now she's polling 44 to 50%, which shows how one issue Jewish voters have become.
And, New York doesn't really matter because New York always goes blue. But in Florida, places like West Palm and Boca Raton and Cleveland, Ohio, another state that'll be
Good
all
point.
Important. That's where one or two percentage points could make a difference.
Excellent, excellent point. Marco Rubio, and I'm going to get to your calls momentarily. I don't mean to keep you waiting, and I appreciate your patience. I'm going to get there momentarily, but you have Marco Rubio just did a conference call confirming that he's running for president. And reading the Associated Press announcement or news account of that, you have they report that he's talked to, on this conference call, his biggest backers. And he's making a lot about the fact that he sees this coming presidential campaign is a choice between the past, as represented by Hillary, and the future, as represented by him. Then the Associated Press goes on to say, I'm going to quote this sentence because I think it is key, as they tell the story of Rubio's call to his backers. Quote, a first-generation immigrant whose parents fled Cuba, Rubio is hoping to make history as the nation's first Hispanic president. A first-generation immigrant whose parents fled Cuba. Bogus. His parents didn't flee Cuba. Rubio allowed this legend to build up about how his heroic parents fled the communist dictators, the Castro brothers, that they made their way here, heroic immigrants. Bogus. Never happened. It never happened. His parents emigrated to this country, just like millions and millions of other immigrants, for economic opportunity during the Batista regime, during the right-wing regime. They left during the right-wing regime in Cuba, not during the Castro regime. He was busted on that. I think that it is because he told this untruth, this Brian Williams-esque untruth about his origins, that this will come back to haunt him. They didn't flee Cuba. They got a ticket and they left during the time you could freely come and go. And they were just one among tens of millions of immigrants. And that's why he should be more compassionate and progressive about how to deal with all of these undocumented immigrants. I think his parents were documented, though. But still, I mean, as an immigrant, as a first-generation immigrant, you'd think he'd be... I mean, he started off as an immigrant reformer, but then when his Tea Party backer said no, no, he backed off a big time. Very disappointing. But I'm very disappointed in Marco Rubio, you know, for not only this foundational misstatement, but also how he chickened out on immigration reform. He really... you know, he lost it as far as I'm concerned. He's just doing whatever the Tea Party says to do right now, it seems to me. That's what I think, Jeb. I mean, you got two candidates. Marco Rubio was kind of a protege of Jeb Bush, but Jeb Bush is just better, more consistent on his issues. As much as I would love to see a Hispanic president in this country, ultimately we will. And maybe it'll even be Marco Rubio. I just think that he's got these real problems he's got to surmount first. In Manhattan, David's on the line. Hey, David, thanks for calling.
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call. I saw some statistics that showed that it's the weakest part of the Democratic Party that decides who their nominee is in the primary. And the major part that we associate with ensuring Democratic presidents for all time, demographically and all the changes, that's the part that puts them in the Oval Office. But the weakest part, demographically, ethnically, racially, that's the weakest part that decides nominee. There's a huge disconnect. So the Republicans' only chance of defeating Hillary is by some legitimate or illegitimate way of ensuring she doesn't win the primary.
I don't think that that's possible.
I think, well...
Who's going to beat her? I mean, there's no... Remember, you had John Edwards. He was really going after her full bore.
Right.
That was before his own sex scandals. So you had John Edwards. He was really looking good.
But
had Barack Obama, who, you know, opposed the war in Iraq, unlike Hillary.
But weren't there some games played where in those states where you can vote, no matter what party you're registered, you can vote either way?
Maybe. I get your point. So you're saying that the Republicans crossed over just to screw Hillary in the primary process?
Well, I think they did that to try to screw Barack, and they couldn't. They knew that was their only hope. They did everything to try to get Hillary to be the
nominee. You think? Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I'm not sure Machiavellian... speak who screwed whom, but I think that I didn't mean to cut you. I mean that you know, your basic point, if they're going to stop Hillary, maybe the primary is the best place to do it, or certainly to damage her there. Here's Tom in New Jersey. What are you thinking about, Tom?
Yeah, how you doing? I just want to tell you and keep an eye on it, because I have a relative in the movie business. They're doing a commercial with the Ambassador Stevens' mother, with the original emails, her son pleading to Hillary to send help 5 months in advance. 5 months in advance. It's going to be over before you know it. Hillary's going to the dog.
You think that Benghazi is going to be the central and defining issue? I guess he does. I think that Benghazi, you know, having lived through that, I mean, reported it from day one and having almost been killed in Libya. Remember, I've got a lot of experience there with the Islamist militants, and there's no doubt that that consulate should have been fortified. But I just think that we've been through that so much now that how could you have anticipated, you know, really an Al-Qaeda style attack? Maybe you should have, maybe you could have, but is that the disqualifier to be president? I mean, Rand Paul believes it is, that he believes that she is disqualified from being president because of Benghazi pre, during, and after. I'm not so sure.
You know, when you've been in politics as long as she has, 20 plus years, you come with a resume that's, you know, 5 miles long. And there, of course, she's come up with a great argument for that. You know, I mean, that's part of the process of her jumping into the race. And I was reading that she only decided really for sure over the Christmas break that she was jumping in. Here all along, we said, okay, this
did
is
you buy that?
I think she thought, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. But that final decision may not have come until December. You don't think so?
You remember that victory tour she took as Secretary of State? They had her going everywhere.
I do remember.
Hundreds of thousands of miles. I mean, literally, all over the globe. That was supposed to be her victory tour. In the same way that Chris Christie, when he announced for a re-election at Liberty Park there with the Statue of Liberty behind him, that was supposed to be his launch for the big presidential announcement. And both of them turned to crap on them. I mean, Christie because of Bridgegate, Hillary because when she was touring around, Benghazi happened. And maybe if she was staying in one place and paying attention, it would not have happened. So I think that in both those cases, there was great premeditation that dated back. You know, maybe Saturday Night Live exaggerates when they say she was born and that was the first word she mentioned that she wanted to be president. But I think that this is all premeditated. I think there have been stumbles and they respond to stumbles, and how they respond to stumbles and tumbles and rumbles marks a lot of how they fare as candidates. I mean, Barack Obama, who would have figured what a run he had? And just I mentioned earlier, Caroline Kennedy being anointed by Obama as the ambassador to Japan. Do you remember when she and her Uncle Ted endorsed Barack Obama?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was like stunning. That's what gave Barack Obama the nomination, in my view. Hillary and Bill, as charming as they are, could not compete against the real first family in American politics, the real dynasty, the Kennedys. There was Ted, there was Caroline, when she, the president's daughter, the only survivor of the Klan there at that generation, when she endorsed Barack Obama, I was like stunned. That was it. That was all over but the shouting there. And then Clinton goes to South Carolina and says, oh, of course he got all those black people to vote for him.
Right.
You know, that was, but I think that this is all about premeditation. This is all, you know, they respond, they're professionals. Here is Jim in New Jersey. What are you thinking about, Jim?
Gerardo, I love you, buddy. Believe me, I met you twice before. You couldn't be more of a gentleman. But please stop being the shill for this woman.
Okay.
Okay, please.
I mean, shill for Hillary. Okay.
No, but look, here's the deal with her. She's old. She's got a lot of baggage. Even her own party's going to wind up dumping her. There's a lot of discontent. I don't like Elizabeth Warren. She's probably going to wind up getting it at some point. Clinton is in it just to get the money, and then she'll bow out for health reasons. And on the Republican side, I disagree with you completely, Jeb Bush. This is an old, washed-up, old white guy, and this is coming from an old white guy here. He should be in the garage.
As long as you're not washed up, Jim.
Well, not washed up completely yet, though I'm on my way. But he's the kind of guy who should be in the garage putting little model ships in bottles.
Golly, what a grim future for you and I, Jim, putting little boats in bottles in garages. I wonder about the age thing, though. When you see, I mean, she's worn. She's a, you know, you see some 67-year-olds that are, she's obviously never had any cosmetic stuff. At least it hasn't. Anyway, I'm not going to go there.
You should. You're never going to win on age. You're never going to win going after her clothes. In fact, it only helps her, I think.
But I wonder if age will have more of an impact on Hillary
Remember, she's the second oldest after Reagan.
Right.
And Reagan was a stunning-looking 68-year-old.
He was.
I mean, had full head of hair, remember? And he had those movie star looks and big strapping guy. Hillary does, she does look like a grandmother now in every regard. And they, you know, Erica's a grandma too. She's a stunner.
Yeah, but in some ways that makes her more relatable because the population's older. So they relate to somebody who's in their late 60s, early
70s. What about the millennials
70s.
Though? What about the
computer
geeks?
Well, that's why she's going after them social media. That's why she's going so strong social media, hoping to win them over, and she gets the older people that she's in.
I've got to tell you, what about the Saturday Night Live effect? I was watching that thing, and I said, my goodness, they're gonna kill her the way they killed Sarah Palin.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
26 minutes after 11 o'clock, just thinking about Aaron Hernandez, the Boston Patriot, the New England Patriot tight end accused of murder. That jury's been out for a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, they've spent, 20 hours last week deliberating, and they're back at it today. The 12 jurors.
If they don't have a verdict by today, I'm going to start calling this a hung jury. I mean, the evidence has not been that unequivocal, as stunning as it looked when we saw the surveillance video and all the rest of it. You know, he paints a very sympathetic picture of himself in that courtroom. Very approachable, amiable, very popular, obviously. They're so sports crazy there.
Yeah, so it's 5 days of deliberations. They're expected to, at least today, unless they come up with a verdict, to deliberate until late this afternoon.
And I think that the Etam Pates guy is also, that case goes to the jury. Now, Pedro Hernandez, I don't trust that confession at all. I mean, a feeble-minded guy, you could convince him that he killed, just think of Abe Lincoln if you worked hard enough at it. When I left you last, folks, I asked about, and I get to your calls momentarily. They are excellent calls today, by the way, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the next year and a half or so. But I mentioned the Saturday Night Live effect. You know, satire and ridicule, that's the hardest thing to get over. Just remember Sarah Palin. I could see Russia from my backyard and all that. How they, Saturday Night Live, worked her over. Tina Fey became more associated with Sarah Palin than Sarah Palin was. You know, she became a joke, a punchline. Jerry Ford, remember when, what's his name? Chevy Chase was doing Jerry Ford, falling all over the place. You're a little young for that. But, I mean, you look at the archives. They ridiculed Jerry Ford. That's why one of the reasons I think that Jimmy Carter beat Jerry Ford was every time you saw Jerry Ford, you expect him to stumble and fall and slip over his golf clubs, right, fall down the steps of the airplane and all the helicopter and all the rest of it. I think the Saturday Night Live satire on Hillary Clinton was so over the top, but it reminded you of everything disagreeable about Hillary Clinton. And I've seen some of that in real life. I mean, sometimes she's looked at me that way. When I was chasing her, like in Haiti, on the earthquakes, she wanted to talk to me like she wanted to talk to, Satan. I wonder if that Saturday Night Live, if they continue that. Now they have Daryl Hammond back on the show.
Yeah, right.
He's the announcer. He took over Don Pardo's job as the announcer on Saturday Night Live. So obviously they're going to use him to be the Bill Clinton character. So he's going to have a nice run now. He's already in-house. So, and he does a great, lecherous, comedic, over-the-top Bill Clinton. But when you see the over-the-top stuff between, I forget the comedian, the actress who plays Hillary Clinton. You know her name?
I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, well, look it up. She's so good and so close enough, despite the obvious exaggeration, that I think it's going to have an impact.
You think a negative impact?
I definitely do. There's nothing lovable about that character when she bares her fangs and say, oh my God. Now, everybody that's ever been divorced is going to say, oh, that's my old ex-wife. I need this like a hole in the head. Eddie in Staten Island, what's up, Eddie?
Well, we got our first black president.
We did?
So we might as well get our first lesbian in. Because she's been with more women than you have not. Okay? Have a good day.
Hey, Eddie should have his own talk show. I don't know. I don't even know where I go from that one. Ay, ay, ay. All right, here's Nima. Hi, Nima.
Hi, Ural. This is Nima. A long time I haven't been calling.
Well, now I'm glad you called, buddy. What's up?
Yeah, I'm still calling to thank you for letting everybody call in and speak.
Everybody is welcome here, Nima, but make your point in a hurry, quick.
Yeah, because the other talk show, they don't allow people.
All right, Nima, but this can't be about me. I appreciate your call. You're absolutely right, though. Everybody is welcome here. All right, when we come back, I've got to talk about Jordan Spieth, the golfer. I've got to talk about A-Rod. I got to talk about, Game of Thrones. A lot going on.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC. You're sampling.
The market's been simply the best investment. It's up almost 40. So it's almost 18,100. Who would have thunk? But in sports, simply the best is simply Jordan Spieth. I don't know if you saw this kid. You watch golf at all?
I watched yesterday. It was unbelievable.
It was. It was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I have a hard time watching golf when it's not Tiger Woods. I mean, I just... Tiger Woods is so, his story is so compelling and his track record so compelling. And when you remember, with all of the talk about this current phenomenon, this 21-year-old Jordan Spieth, who won the, of course, he won the Masters yesterday. Remember that Tiger did it in 1997, but Spieth tied Tiger's lowest ever, minus 18, at the Masters. 21 years old. So he tied him in terms of minus 18. That's the lowest score ever, which is the best in golf, as you know. And he tied him for the... Oh, no, he didn't die. Tiger is still the youngest ever. But I was watching with great interest until I saw Tiger Woods hurt himself. And I said to myself, you know, what you want, particularly when you have some age on you like I do, you want the old-timers. That's why I think I had a lot of people rooting for me in Celebrity Apprentice. You know, you want the old timers to rise up to the, you know, to the glory years.
Oh, yeah.
And to watch him to come back from all the injuries and all the publicity and everybody, you know, all the attention and, oh, no, he could never compete in a major tournament again. And to watch him was so heartening. And then when he hurt himself, then all of the mortality and all that, I'm putting too much into it.
Well, he swung and he hit a tree root. As he was on the, you know, as he was swinging and, you know, it hit his hand so hard that he popped a bone out and he still continued to play, but he had been playing great up until that point.
He was very competitive. He was fifth. And I don't know where he finished, but the kid, I don't know, is this kid going to catch on? Does he have that kind of personality? Is he going to reinvigorate the game of golf?
You know, maybe. I don't follow golf close enough to really even know who he was until I was watching this weekend, so. But maybe I'm in the minority that
way. No, I don't think so. I think this was his weekend. I mean, he won. That's why he won. I guess he won some tournament before this. But last year he came in second at 20. So anyway, we were born in 1993. Yeah. I mean, the shirt I'm wearing I bought in 1993.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, to be 21 years old and to be the best golfer. Marty, did you play a Trump's course in the Bronx?
I did, Geraldo. And I want to say one thing about this course. There is nothing like it in New York City.
What do you mean?
Well, number one, there's this fantastic golf course, this world-class Jack Nicklaus golf course, and it's 12 miles from Midtown. And when you're there, the vistas of the Manhattan skyline, the bridge, the Whitestone and the Throgs Neck Bridge, I mean, every single hole takes your breath away. The most interesting thing about the day, other than fantastic golf course, it's a championship course, is that the Donald K. came to visit the course.
Is that right? He's everywhere lately.
I mean, but it was so nice to see. I mean, very low-key, came with his wife and his young son. He walked down the practice range and just had a kind word to say to all the golfers. Hey, nice shot. What do you think of the golf course? And then he proceeded to take a golf cart and go through the entire course, just saying hi to people. And, you know, he didn't create any sort of distraction or anything like that. And, you know, he didn't come with anybody. There were no cameras or anything like that. But let me tell you that New Yorkers, it is a treat. You know, it's a little pricey. But
How much?
Well, let me say it like this. It's about double what it would be for a regular public course. But what you get is a country club experience on a world-class golf course.
In New York City.
In New York City. That's just great. Spectacular.
Good for him. I mean, I'm telling you, I think that I know that Donald Trump comes with a lot of baggage. You know, he flamboyantly led the charge in terms of that whole birther nonsense, etc. But there is no better manager out there. I mean, if they say now that like Scott Walker and Jeb Bush should be the people in the lead when it comes to your consideration on the GOP side, because they're managers, they're chief executives of major states. I mean, Walker, Wisconsin, and Jeb Bush in the day in Florida. Then look at the Trump experience in terms of management, how he has put together. You know, he inherited some. He had somewhat of a head start, but he took a firm that was a, you know, a substantial firm, but nothing like what he has built. And I keep coming back to the West Side. I mean, if you know anything about the West Side, that whole strip there, 11th Avenue, what that used to be like, and 12th Avenue, the West Side Highway, used to be such a dump.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, from 57th Street all the way to 72nd Street was a dump. And it was no development could take place because all the people living in the buildings on West End Avenue there were, you know, they were so keen on protecting views that they didn't pay for. And they were against any development whatsoever, very selfishly, as people tend to be when it comes to real estate. Very selfishly, they preferred the relics of those torn up old docks over, you know, buildings put in front of them. But what Trump managed to jam down their throat after persevering a decade of opposition, that neighborhood now is so remade. It is so lovely. And there's all those families now have been brought to the West Side. You have children now playing in parks. The Riverside development there in terms of amenities for people, screens for outdoor movies, cafes, jogging tracks, bicycle tracks, and all the rest of it has improved the city so much. And now you look at this golf course in the Bronx and the Wallman skating
rink. Yeah, right.
You add all those things together, that's what you want. And that's what I want in my mayor. That's why I can't believe that de Blasio's never met Trump. You know, and why, under what pragmatic reason does one of the largest, most important developers never get to meet the mayor of the city where they both, you know, in the waters they both ply? How does that happen?
It should be an invite.
It's not only an invite, there should be a relationship. I mean, Mayor de Blasio, shame on him. I mean, how could you not reach out to the people who create jobs? You're a Democrat, you're a progressive, you want people working? Then how could you not embrace someone like Trump and all the jobs he's created and how nicely he has set the stage for the current real estate boom that we're enjoying now? I don't get it. I don't get it. One more thing, Marty, what?
Well, you mentioned a dump on the West Side. The golf course at Ferry Point is literally built on a garbage dump.
Imagine that. And you're absolutely right. I've forgotten that.
Yeah, and it was there vacant for 30 years. They've now spent $260 million. It's the most expensive public course on the planet, and we have it right in our backyard.
I'm all for it, and bravo to Trump.
Wasn't there some big moment on that course over the weekend with Donald Trump?
What happened?
I don't know. I think Marty
No. Donald actually on one of the holes got a hole in one, and there's a plaque
lying.
There. No, they say there were 50 people around, so there's no way.
No way you got a hole in one.
Not over the weekend. It was during one of the practice rounds, and got a hole in one.
You see his apartment and his wife, and you see all the money and everything, and the kid, you start to envy, and then there's always some reason not to, but the hole in one.
We haven't found it yet.
A hole in one. I'm lucky if I ever get a par. And that's on a three hole. In the other sports news, I have to say, for all of the hype and the, Gunn's left already. I want to drag his ass in here to talk about A-Rod. I mean, A-Rod drove in four runs.
Yeah.
He hit that double with the bases loaded, driving three runs. They finally beat the Red Sox after that heartbreaker, which I made the mistake of watching. They lost 5-4 in, 104 innings the other night. They come back and they beat the Sox. They had one bad game in between, but they beat them yesterday at the stadium. And now you have the interesting point. I gotta get to the commercial, but you have the interesting point. You have Alex Rodriguez is closing in on Willie Mays. He's just, five home runs shy of tying Willie Mays on the home run list, the all-time home run list. With 660, I mean, what happens when A-Rod hits 661?
Well, he wins everybody back. That's what happens.
Or do you say that it's illegitimate because of all the years he played juiced up? Just like Barry Bonds.
Well, there'll always be an asterisk there, yeah.
And you have that. And, you know, he's had quite a career. I mean, it's too bad this whole drug thing. How sad they go for the short money. But you have, he needs one more stolen base to be in 16th place all time. And he needs to score three more runs to tie Derek Jeter for ninth place.
Wow.
All time.
Wow.
Ever in the history of baseball. You know, so, it's almost too bad that these performance-enhancing drugs. There's always a performance-enhancing something.
Yeah.
You know, they used to shave their, the spikes for the sliding into second.
Right. Well, they
used
legal.
the tar base on the bats, and you know the sandpaper in the glove for the knuckleballers and all that.
They're legal till they're illegal. That's the problem. And he got on, you know, when it was illegal, unfortunately.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
5 minutes to 11 o'clock on this 13th day of April. So if I didn't get to your calls, I apologize. Call tomorrow. We'll obviously stay on the political beat. I want us to be one of your go-to places for the state of the race as it develops. But I don't want to be restricted to that. There's just too much going on. I am very concerned about, and we haven't paid any attention to it in days, the whole ISIS fight. And whether or not we're doing enough to stop the spread of radical Islam, and whether or not I'm doing enough personally to be the counterweight to the propagandist side of American political life, those who stubbornly maintain that Iran is somehow a graver danger than ISIS, al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, the Taliban, all these Sunni extremist groups. I've got to keep that job. I also want to give you my iconoclastic view of politics in the country, in the sense that the whole point we made today about de Blasio in league with Clinton, all this is premeditated. The whole, he's the he's about as independent as I can't even think of an analogy there, but not very. But I appreciate your calls. They're so smart. And like I said to that one caller, everybody is welcome here. Love you. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watch The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.